Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Hello and welcome back to the PLL Happy Hour Podcast. We are back post-championship series 2025, the debut of the Women's Lacrosse League, the clean sweep Boston accomplishes. The Cannons become the first repeat in the PLL as championship series title winners. The Boston Guard are the first WLL championship winners. So, very exciting time in the PLL universe. Chris Rosenthal here alongside me, Kevin Brown. Glad to have you guys here with us. We're going to recap some of the awesome happenings about that championship series, starting with the championship Monday. We're recording this on Tuesday night, which, Rosie, we're about 9 hours removed from the first permitted contact with other opposing coaches and the free agent class of 2025. Free agency begins March 3rd. Keep it here on InsideLacrosse.com. We'll be tracking all of those moves and more storylines as that gets nearer. But Rosie, we've got some title winners to discuss. First off, how are you doing? And how much did you enjoy that week of covering the Champ Series?
I'm excellent, thank you. Championship Series week is one of my favorite weeks of the year, each and every year. So, you know, I always look forward to it and has always delivered. You know, this was no exception. I feel like they step up their game every time as far as the experience and, you know, the teams kind of evolving their strategies. You know, just the way that the players and the fans react to it, you can tell that everybody's taking it seriously and gets super involved in it. And yeah, so now, like you mentioned, you know, free agency's right here. There's literally no downtime whatsoever. And the year just kind of keeps rolling now.
The evolution of strategies they hit on there has been fascinating to follow. Of course, this is not the Olympic format. Very close to it. The sixes discipline with a twist of the two-point arc variety. And as you pointed out on social media, let the woman have a two-pointer, you cowards. Emily Howard-Schuck is an animal shooting from the outside. She won the Golden Stick winner with 19 overall points in goals score. I think it was points actually in the WLL debut. But Rosie, listen, like the evolution from Romar Dennis and Ryan Costabile getting a couple feet across that midline and letting loose beyond the beyond that arc for the Atlas that first year to next year, a little more nuanced, a little more full court press, which we saw from the Chrome winning that title game, carries over to that next year where the Boston Cannons got their first title under current head coach Brian Holman. And this year was just a full out blitz the whole time, and that was really the biggest storyline from opening night to the title game on Monday. The wear and tear of these players to play five games in 7 days was insane, and just listening to how they described it post game, the words refugee camp were used. The morgue looked like hell, what was reading in between the lines. But guys like Marcus Holman, who did not play in Sunday night's semifinal with the lower body injury, Ethan Rawls' feet, had the skin ripped off, which from all the running around he was doing. Jeff Traynor playing on a sprained MCL that Holman kind of broke. Marcus, that is, post-game after that championship game. Bob Fairman with a shoulder issue. I remember him The last game of pool play, ailing and hobbling off the field, holding his shoulder. Campbell's arm was all bandaged up. The fact that they went from the training room on Monday in that morning, those morning hours of despair, to not only throwing the first punch, but dominating, absolutely dominating the reigning overall PLL champs, back-to-back Utah Archers made it their style, was incredible to see. Just watching the broadcast, when as soon as I got home, I put it back on because, well, behind the curtain for the fans. The WLL Championship post-game press conference did go a little long. We missed the start of it. And this Ryan Boyle was all over on the broadcast. It was pure adrenaline from that night before. Rosie, recap for us just how epic of a night the semifinal was. And you asked the question post-game, just how crazy it was to see that adrenaline carry over for Boston into that championship game.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, it's a funny way to look at it. You know, when the Archers get that bye, they're kind of thinking, oh, you know, man, if these two teams, if Atlas and Cannons can, you know, beat the crap out of each other for this semifinal game, you know, whoever drags themselves into the championship, you know, we're going to have easy pickings and just, you know, finish them off, right? Like, they're going to be done. Their tank's going to be on E, and we can kind of step over them and go get our championship. But I guess it's kind of boiled down to one of those careful what you wish for sort of situations. Because, like, look, if Boston just wins that game regularly, I think that's one thing. It's totally different. The way that they came back, and, you know, we'll kind of get back into, you know, all the what went into this game, but, you know, launching this incredible comeback and, you know, these miraculous shots and your whole team going wild, even if you're worn down, you still have all of that energy. You still have all of that wind in your sails. You know, like, you win a game like that, you have to be thinking, okay, this is our championship. You know, like this can just keep carrying. You know, we just have to go one more day. Now we're feeling amazing. I bet all that pain hurts a little bit less. You know, all the injuries are not quite as brutal if you end up winning that game. And in such a fashion, you're like, we have a lot more in us than we thought. And I think the Archers, who, funny enough, really thought, you know, we spoke to Coach Bates about this, you know, who really thought that bye day would kind of be a difference maker in their favor. I think maybe it worked the other way. You know, not that they were underestimating their opponent or anything like that, but they go into the game feeling good, you know, feeling loose and comfortable. And, you know, you've got the Cannons just kind of, you know, running straight into your face like barbarians after that win. You know, they're all sorts of jacked up after that game. So, yeah, it's really no surprise that they just got popped in the mouth early, because That's a lot of energy they were not expecting to have their way. And I do want to double back on one thing. You know, you mentioned how brutal this whole thing was, you know, and the players kind of elaborated as far as the wear and tear on their bodies. I would love to see some sort of release or declaration about all the specifics, you know, like they'll kind of do after the Stanley Cup playoffs. They say, okay, you know, so-and-so had a broken foot. He's been skated on. You know, they kind of pull back and reveal what all happened. There were a couple of those during, like you mentioned, during the Cannons presser. I think, you know, we don't have like a reporter union or anything like that, but I think the reason why, at least I didn't report any of it out, and, you know, perhaps you have your own reasons, is because, like, I wasn't sure exactly how much was, you know, literal or not. Like, during the press conference, Brian Holman said Ethan Rall had cracked ribs, you know, and that stuck out to me. But I don't know if that's a medical diagnosis or if he just got cracked in the ribs or something like that. So I didn't want to run with it as far as like an actual breaking news. Ethan Rall's got some broken ribs or something like that. But yeah, no, a trainer had the same sort of thing. I think he said partially torn MCL. Is it an M or an L or an ACL? You know, we can't go literally with what Marcus Holman tells us on that, but I feel like for the podcast, we certainly can. So yeah, according to what they said, it was really bad. And I think that big, big semifinal win really helped those injuries not be quite so terrible and helped them get across the finish line.
Shout out Brooke and the physical trainer staff. Not quite the print setting that Coach Brian Holman asked for, but you are on the podcast wavelengths. Brooke, if you're listening to this, please reach out and give Rosie that post-mortem, post-game injury report.
Hit me up, Brooke. Hit me up.
Fans will love to know. To catch any fans who aren't paying close attention to this championship series up on exactly how we got here, the format did change from, which was a great bracket format, structural, logistical, whatever you want to call it, changed this year to four semifinalists to just the two. And the first place finishers in the three games of pool play advanced right to that championship game. So, I mean, when we say the Utah Archers got that supposedly extra valuable night of rest, the Boston Cannons did not, because Sunday night, oh my God, I was so glad I came down there for it. The ending really made the trip, the... There's trees down on I-95, and boy, was that traffic worth it, because the ending to this one was like no other. And Rosie, it's sad because this champ series probably had less exciting finishes than the first 2 years overall, but this one night really made up for it. So the New York Atlas dealt another semifinal blow, a collapse, if you will. I think it's very fair to say that they the were the opposite of clutch in this game management, clock management, end of game. The New York Atlas were up three with less than a minute left. Jeff Traynor, in his championship series debut with the Cannons, at least this season, bounces home a high bouncer right to the top left corner. So they got hope. New York Atlas, 20 seconds left. No 30-second shot clock is on the board. In a very important note, because I think the coaching staff and the players thought it was at least close enough that the Cannons would have had a shot to at the other end regardless. But Cospiel gets a dunk, and oh my God, was that a mistake? He should have taken it right behind the net, because here come the Cannons, cursed, the Astronauting to midfield, where Golden Stick eventual winner Matt Campbell is waiting, double team over to Alex Verdaro. Oh my goodness, what a two-pointer to with 2 seconds left to send it to overtime. The adrenaline gained from that, the crowd is going nuts. Ryan Drenner scores the lone goal of overtime. And most of that is because Colin Kirst stands on his head in that fourth quarter, stands on his head in that overtime, four saves in the overtime, carries that over to the championship. And he couldn't be beaten in the early stages of that game. So just to catch you up contextually of how epic that ending was, it makes sense. Why the Cannons had that adrenaline going, why they were able to overcome so many ailments and injuries. But when I got home to finish my game recap for IL, just the listening back to Matt Campbell's answers mostly fired me up, man. Like, he had the, I think, and I would have loved to hear his explanation on the podcast, but it was such a podcast answer post-game setting where he was like, guys, if you heard Brody come in there, give us a team talk, and be like, I used to love playing banged up, man. Like, how could you not get fired up after hearing that? So he said he's never been more motivated in his life to go out and play a game. And boy, did it show. 8 points to take home the Golden Stick Award, 7 goals and an assist. Rosie, Marcus Ullman called Matt Campbell the best player in the world. That's certainly some hyperbole, but some high praise that is deserved after that championship series, which Brian Holman, the coach, Marcus's dad, of course, he said, he's probably the best player for this format, and with the two-pointer, there's no doubt about it. How much of a joy was it to watch Campbell in this event, and just what did you make of their ability to take that adrenaline from Sunday night and carry into the title game?
Well, so as far as Campbell goes, I think, and, you know, I've heard them kind of mention this before, that perhaps he is, you know, and I guess we're guilty of it, maybe, not given the kind of recognition that some other people in his position, maybe who put up his kind of numbers or are as dangerous with the ball. You know, maybe he doesn't get enough attention or publicity or something for that. And during this championship series, watching him play, all I was thinking was like, you know, offense or defense, I was just like, hey, he's just kind of unstoppable right now. You know, there was no discernible weak spot in his game. There's a lot of great sixes players who, you know, might be liabilities defensively because it's so out of their zone, you know, or, you know, whatever the case may be. Maybe they're inside threats, but they can't stretch the field, or, you know, maybe they can finish, but they aren't, you know, the best feeders. There seem to be a lot of people kind of having one or two attributes that aren't quite as built up as the others. But no, man, he had every single box checked. Like, he is sprinting up the field on defense, you know, causing turnovers. He is, you know, obviously a threat from deep. It's just, he was difficult to match up cover wise. Like, you know, he's got size and speed. He was really just doing whatever he wanted to out there, and just game after game, it was, hands down the top performance, I would say, in a weekend, just, or a week full of, you know, peak performers. You know, there are a lot of people who are stars of one game here or one game there, you know what I mean? But, I mean, Campbell just was incredible the whole time. And I remember thinking like, all right, I need to do a better job saying some nice things about Matt Campbell. You know, so, I mean, as far as best player in the world, you know, I certainly expect them to say that. And I'm going to say like, okay, I will put him on that watch list because he has certainly fought his way onto it.
Well said. Like the points leader, 35 points, Golden Stick winner, one point goals. Yeah, had 19 of them, and he really rounded out his game as the event went on with those assists. He led everyone with 12. He had a 4 assist game, a 5 assist game, I think. The answer moves, though, for me, where he would either fake like he's sweeping up, go underneath, or a little hezzy rocker move, and still go underneath. Like, he had it all going on. Like, there was no stopping him, for sure.
Yeah. And back to the game in particular, that semifinal game, as far as the late-game heroics, another really weird thing about it is, so, you know, you mentioned Trainer making his first appearance of the whole thing, right? Like, what if he isn't in the game? Like, maybe that shot doesn't fall. That shot was, it was a two-pointer. It was also a super deep two-pointer. Like, it was an incredible bouncer two-pointer from a mile away. And, you know, it was his first one of the series, of course. And Verdaro, that was his first as well. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, you know, okay, right, these are your classic finisher. It wasn't like they were like, all right, let's pass it to Asher and get out of his way, right? You know, because that's something you could expect, you know, because you've seen that a million times. But they're like, all right, you know, we need a huge improbable comeback here. Let's get it to Jeff Traynor and Alex Verdaro. Take us home, fellas.
And desperation, just the Hail Marys, the sentiment post-game after the championship really rang true for that ending too, I thought, of like, F it, we might as well give it all we got. Like the that was actually one of the cooler connections Alex Verdara made, the Princeton grad, Georgetown grad transfer. While he was at Princeton, the his shooting coach, Chris Aslanian, who was on the Cannons, was his shooting coach, just kept telling him to keep shooting, keep and he is an outside shooter. He's a gifted sidearm. He can bring that heat. And boy, did they need it more than ever with that last attempt. So, yeah, man, like the ending to that is by far the best endings of the whole championship series. The rest of the games, not so much. Pretty lopsided. The team would get up early and just out-athlete you for those 32 minutes for most of it, or if you're Stags or the Whips, you would blame the lack of finishing on it, whereas clearly just a lot more going on that Sixes, just a lot more help was needed. Whereas Rosie, I want to touch on just a little bit, and we'll get back to the PLL side of things, but it was the debut of the Women's Lacrosse League, and those games were tense. They were dramatic, thrilling, epic, one-goal games each of the first two nights, and then still entertaining the next couple before the Charlotte North-led Boston Guard sportsbook favorites came out and won it. In convincing fashion, with coming off a bye themselves, so kind of a reverse of the men's Cannons team that needed that extra grit in armor and the extra layer of just battling the night before. Rosie, what were your takeaways coming away from the WLL action?
I mean, so first of all, I thought the teams were really well put together in a sense that there was no, like, crap team that was going to get kicked around, you know? And you can look at the rosters and tell, okay, you know, they put these college teammates together and those college teammates together, you know, similar to how the PLL started. But also, it was pretty close, you know? It wasn't like, okay, just because, you know, the all these people are UNC, they're going to get, you know, dragged by this other school. Most of the games, like you mentioned, were one or two goals. There were a couple, you know, Charging kind of ran away with it against the Palms in the semis. But other than that, you're pretty much watching the whole game, not really knowing who's going to win. So I thought they really nailed the roster selection right off the bat. You know, you don't want a bad product if this is the first time for you watching, you know, women's lacrosse or something like that. And if one team just steamrolls everybody, then you're probably going to stop tuning in. So, I, you know, shout out to the WLL and all the people who had to do what they do in their formulas to put together proper teams. I thought the games were phenomenal. They were easy to follow, really easy to identify, you know, who was outstanding in their own ways. You know, I heard a lot of people at the venues talking about, you know, oh, this person is really good at, you know, this particular thing, right? Or, you know, you guys, you got to see, if you haven't seen Sydney Black, you got to see her dodge, right? Or, you know, you have to see, there's so many goalies who had these remarkable performances. I mean, each goalie kind of had a day where they were the star of the whole thing. So everybody kind of took turns being a superstar, which I think is also something that the league really needed moving forward as well. Obviously, you know, Charlotte North, and she did her thing, and you know, she was excellent. But what I thought was really good was she didn't destroy everybody. Because, like, you know, if she's the only player you know, yeah, you know, maybe you think that she's so awesome, she will just score 14 and blow everybody out. But that's not the case. There were players who were just as good in some games. You know, some players had more highlight reel plays and things like that, which really gave fans an opportunity to say, okay, you know, I don't have to come in and be a de facto Charlotte North fan. I can be a California Palms fan because, you know, Ali Mastrione is actually really good at going coast to coast, and that was cool, right? Or Marilyn Charm, you see, like I said, Cindy Black, or you see Abby Bosco do something cool. They just offered a lot of ways to get in to this, and I think it really paid off for her.
The Charlotte North effect is definitely real. The viral videos, photos from the Friday night sellout was insane. The Caitlin Clark of lacrosse is definitely a valid comparison when you look at the autograph lines post game after that championship that I was there for. Just incredible stuff. And to your point, yeah, Kaylee Waters kept the charm in a lot of those games. Madison Doucette had that record-breaking 21 save performance, which is just unreal for the Sixers format, the type of shots that you face from close range. Taylor Moreno joined the former two-time Athletes Unlimited champ, joined Liam Entman in the goalie goal category, so that was fun.
Did it first, too. She had it first.
She had it first, exactly. So Liam joined Taylor, of course. And yeah, the Boston Guard actually dropping their first game, to your point, I think really helped build the surrounding star power of this league. I did think the charging was going to steamroll everyone with that roster. Kylie O'Miller mentioned it post-game after that opening night. One-goal win where she had the first goal in league history. She's like, look at all our stats in college. We're all the all-time leaders of all these all-time great programs. And she was right. Her being the all-time NCAA leader, Izzy Skein being the all-time NCAA goal scorer, the Meg Tyrell, all-time Syracuse point leader, the list goes on. Harshuk, all-time Cuse goal leader. She ended up winning the Golden Stick, and they didn't blow anyone out except the Palms in the semifinal. But even that was kind of flattering of score for them. So I do think those close games were super important, and the overall product that the WLL put forth, both servicing the players, promoting the players. This is only the start. We anxiously await what is to come from this, whether it's a full summer season of Sixes or what comes next. It's definitely a great jumping off point for the WLL and a storybook ending with North coming up on top behind a pretty spectacular defense, I might add, and her college goalie as well at BC with Rachel Hall anchoring things back there. Rosie, let's get back to the PLL a little bit just to wrap things up. You were at the Roy Colsey, Spencer Ford first head coach general manager duo for the Carolina Chaos in PLL history introductory press conference ahead of Sunday's semifinal. Rosie, what were some things you took away from that one?
Well, the best part was what I felt was their transparency, and Paul Rabel kicked it off with some transparency as well. You know, started off giving a shout out to Andy Towers, saying, hopefully, in the future they'll find something, some projects together. Maybe he'll find his way back to the PLL. So, maybe we haven't heard the last of Andy Towers in the pro ranks. But as far as Colsey and Ford went, yeah, just kind of laid it out, their sort of vision for the organization. they stressed that they feel like they've got a really strong defense already, you know, so they're just, you know, I guess telling us what we would assume, right? Their priorities are making sure that defense is all signed up and ready to go, and then tinkering with the offense a bit, both on the personnel side and the schematics side, but not dramatically different, I'd say, probably, because Roy Colsey is a former box coach with an extensive history of success playing in the NLL. So he is going to bring a sort of a hybrid style with box and field influences. Like, don't be surprised if you see that again out of Carolina. But, you know, I think they have a real strong understanding of what they have. You know, Josh Byrne is going to be a focal point of their offense. And, you know, they want to work with him, and he wants to work with them based on what, you know, what Colsey and Ford were saying. They, Roy Colsey described having like an hour and a half conversation with the captains of the squad. And what he took away from meeting with Josh Byrne was he really wanted to be in a situation where he knew he would be able to get instruction on how to get better at what he was doing. You know, not so much, you know, hey, Josh, you'll get him next time, you know, not just supporting him because it's obviously good, but he needs the feedback and the instruction as to how he can take his game to the next level, right? I mean, he's obviously phenomenal, but he believes, and we have to agree that, yeah, maybe he can even get better. And how does he lead a team to a championship? And, you know, that's what he's here for, right? Like, he has other options. I think that is something we're all well aware of. Josh Byrne could, you know, head back home and do something else. So if he's going to be here in the PLL, you know, there are things that he wants, and they are certainly interested in working with him to make sure he gets those things. So, yeah, they're totally clear. They want to bring back the defense. You know, most of those guys are locked in right now. But Newman, I think we'll get to some free agency stuff, but Jared Newman is, you know, free to walk as of next month. But yeah, they said they have a championship defense. They've got obviously a championship Hall of Fame goalie. They just need to do some reconstruction on the offensive end, and they're very clear about that. Another thing that was cool was both Roy Colsey and Spencer Ford are, you know, they're, if you're unfamiliar with them, if you're listening to this and you're unfamiliar with them, they're both superstar professional players in their own rights. Spencer Ford was an assist leader who had a record for single season assists for a long time. Roy Colsey is a champion with the old Barrage teams. And so they, while the game has certainly evolved, you know, while PLL is different from MLL, they've both been very involved in paying attention to what the PLL game is like and requires. And, you know, they obviously have their own sort of instincts as being top-notch Hall of Fame competitors as well. So they seem to be on the same page, what they were saying as far as the kind of players they're looking for to bring in as far as free agency and the drafts go. And, you know, they've been texting back and forth with, you know, how does this player sound? What do you think about this guy? So, you know, they're kind of they're kind of coming up on it because, like you mentioned, the free agency discussion period is here already. But they've been playing catch up and trying to meet with everybody and get up to speed. And, you know, they're both really looking forward to their unique opportunity and challenge with having the head coach and GM roles kind of working together. One other thing I'll say was kind of interesting was when the job was first kind of kicked over in Colsey's corner, he was curious about doing both things. He was kind of excited about being the GM and a head coach, you know, kind of like the fantasy lacrosse side of things. But ultimately, they were like, well, what do you think about just being the head coach? And he was like, oh, you know, I'm not really sure what's that going to be like. And then the concept of Spencer Ford being his general manager was presented to him. And Spencer Ford has one of the greatest pro GM resumes in professional lacrosse, right? Like he is the guy as far as, you know, roster construction and all that stuff goes. So, you know, Colsey was like, okay, you know, if Spencer Ford, kind of the way he put it was like, if Spencer Ford wants to be a GM, I want him to be the GM on my team because I don't want him to be the GM on somebody else's team. You don't want to have to go against him. So he was like, okay, I won't be the GM because that means I get to have Spencer Ford do it. So, and honestly, I think, you know, they're both probably going to help on both sides of it. That's not something that is, you know, officially written down. You know, they do have specific roles, but, you know, I think you'd have to be nuts not to ask Spencer Ford, hey, what do you think about this play? You know, because he knows lacrosse. And, you know, similarly, Spencer Ford might, you know, run some, you know, some draft concerns or whatever by Roy Colsey. They will be working together significantly, but Ford gets the final decisions on the roster construction, and Colsey gets the final decisions on the on-field stuff.
Yeah, well, it is an important distinction from my reporting. I did think that who, or through the process of who the PLL was talking to and interviewing for this head coaching opening, that they, like, whoever the candidate was requesting for a GM, so they didn't have to take on those responsibilities. And even if Roy Colsey didn't do that, it is going to be beneficial for him to just only throw that coach's hat on and be able to talk to his players about game plan, what they can do better, without worrying, hey, is this guy just going to walk on me in the off season and that kind of stuff. So it is an exciting time. We're not sure the timetable of if other PLL clubs will get general managers. So that'll be an interesting storyline to follow as we ask about it. And, you know, I was more familiar with Colsey's game at the pro level. I feel like those two bombs on the Philly Barrage teams, the garbage, if you will, the Kyle Dixon before Kyle Dixon, maybe, like, he was an insane player, and I'm very excited to see both of them work together. Like, the talking about draft boards, I'm super pumped to get their thoughts on things, but when that time gets closer to May. Both of them have sons playing at the Division I level. Spencer Ford Jr. Might be taking a redshirt year, hasn't appeared in a game yet at Maryland. We'll see how that progresses down in College Park. But Ryan Colsey took a starting spot from the NCAA all-time goals leader in Peyton Cormier that left the attack position in Virginia. So he had a bounce-back game with the Cavs, overcoming the High Point Panthers after their upset defeat against Richmond in week two play. So it'll be, they'll definitely have some great takes on following the college landscape as we get there. So,
two things, you know, further to what you were just saying about their sons, they both kind of mentioned that as kind of a great sort of selling point working in their favor. Any given weekend, they both are going to be super tuned in to college lacrosse, right? Like, it's not going to be kind of a side project like, oh, let me check out a game here and there. Like, they're going to be in the stands interviewing, you know, I guess I should say air quotes, interviewing some of the players, right? Because, you know, if you're you know, if your son has a classmate, you know, you're allowed to hang out with them, right? So, you know, they're going to get to know a lot of players. They're going to constantly be watching and super involved in the top programs. So they're going to know a lot what's going on. They're really going to have their homework done in advance for this draft. Another thing that could be nothing, could be something. Maybe nothing, maybe something. Not for me to say, but it is interesting. Roy Colsey was mentioning his time getting to meet some of his players, and he mentioned, you know, he's still involved in doing some box coaching, and he coached up at a box tournament and got to hang out a little bit and get to speak with Josh Byrne more when he was there, because Byrne was coaching a team. You know, he does like a, you know, a youth coaching project of his own. And he also coaches with, you know, his old friend Dane Smith. And so Josh introduced him to his old friend Dane Smith and was like, you know, hey, Roy, I want you to meet Dane. Dane, meet Roy. They hadn't met, but they got along great. And Roy had nothing but nice things to say about Dane Smith. Again, could be something, could be nothing.
Love it. Put the pressure on.
I'm just saying, I feel like that's something that should be mentioned, right? Like,
hey, that's like, hey, I had a great time talking to Dane Smith. like, come back and play for me, man. Right. Famously on the holdout list playing MSL ball last summer, and whose contract is technically up with Chaos as free agent.
Again, could be something, could be nothing, but could they have met and talked and had a great time.
They had a great time indeed. Rosie, a couple other takeaways I want to get to quickly here. We don't have to talk about the Whip Snakes. They stunk. We get it. They didn't have enough athletes surrounding Ryan Conrad and Brad Smith in his return. That was a great story to see, though. TJ Malone is he improved every game, but just didn't have enough surrounding him. The Atlas semifinal hurdle, though, is like Xander Dixon mentioned it post game. Oh my goodness, what a collapse again! Just the seat. It was definitely more credit to the Whip Snakes in September or late August's semifinal. But the semifinal loss to Boston this past week was just, you can't have that happen. Like, do you have any takes about, like, New York not getting it done?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I was thinking about it after the game, and I think maybe there is something, too, once you get there, feeling like you should be there, right? Like, you know, last year the Cannons have this big win in the championship. You know, granted they didn't have Kavanaugh's magic there this year. But, you know, they're the champs heading in this time. And, you know, they have a little stumble, but they're fighting their way through this week. And once you are like, okay, you know, we're still in this game, we're getting close, maybe we can pull this off. I feel like maybe there's a thing there where you're like, okay, we deserve to win this game because we are winners and this is what winners do, right? Like, you know, maybe if they didn't win last year, maybe Jeff Traynor doesn't take that shot, right? Maybe he passes it because he doesn't really have that sort of winning attitude, like this thing's going in. Again, mm-hmm. It was a ridiculous shot to take. But the Atlas is that's the opposite, right? Like, they don't have that mentality because they don't have those wins yet. You know, like yep. you mentioned the outdoor overtime loss, and you know, Champ Series when they were there in 2023, they just destroyed everybody until they got to the championship, and then they lost by a goal to Chrome in that one. So. You know, you hear sometimes people talking about finding out how to win or learning how to win. They have definitely not learned how to win. Like, this was such a super winnable game for them. And, you know, if the teams were reversed, Cannons probably run that out. Because I feel like they have whatever, they have that experience of winning. And it's okay, they are a team that has proven themselves in these situations. But yeah, the whatever the opposite of clutch is, that's what we saw from New York, right? Like, you had that questionable goal there. Chet Camizio was running down the shot clock, and instead of like rolling it in the corner, he threw it in the air with 6 seconds left on the shot clock at one point. You know, that's those 6 seconds that he just chose to forego. But he threw it literally to Kirst, and he just started the play back up. You know, it's all these tiny little things that built up to ultimately losing a very winnable game. So yeah, I mean, I don't know how much there is to that whole notion of learning how to win or how much it affects your psyche, but yeah, this New York as a collective does not quite have it yet.
The Yeah, New York Atlas, Boston Cannons, the second game of New York's homecoming in week one will be must-watch 7 p.m. at UAlbany. So that'll be something to look forward to coming on May 31st, Rosie. So the before we get there, though, of course, we'll cover free agency online and make sure to stay tuned in to our socials and what have you for any breaking news there. Rosie, any guys stick out to you in terms of their performances at the championship series that you can see them gaining a roster spot due to their performance? I know from watching field level wise, a lot of guys were like, oh, wow, this Tate Gallagher guy is, and by a lot of guys, I mean me saying to everyone who would listen, like, this Tate Gallagher guy is like 6'4". He looks huge out there. How is he not getting a chance? Any guys that you liked out there that did well?
Well, yeah. So the two who jump out right away, and I guess the first one is kind of a cheat because he was already on a roster a little bit, is our boy Jack Van Overtime. Van Overbeek there for the Utah Archers. He was kind of, he was there waiting in the wings, and they brought him in this one game where they sat Matt Moore to let him rest, and he was outstanding. He's just a top producer. He is not, he does not cower under the big lights. He doesn't defer to anybody. He definitely shows up with an attitude that, he deserves to be where he is. And, Chris Bates kind of mentioned that, like, he is very confident in his ability, and he steps up and delivers, has no problem doing that. So, you got to see how all the numbers play out and everything like that, but I'm sure they'll try to get him back, and I would not be surprised if other teams reach out as well. That's kind of how we saw Ronan Jacoby last year. Great championship series with the Archers, and, if one team sees you, everybody sees you. So, the Atlas, they were also like, hey, why don't you come with us? And, he found a better fit personally leaving the Archers. So, are we going to see Van Overbeek in the same situation where this opens up an opportunity for him elsewhere, or he decides to go back to the team that's gotten him this far? It would be tough to walk away from your two-time champion pals in the Archers, but, stranger things have happened. The other guy who I thought had kind of stronger games as the tournament went along, but I had my eye on the entire time, was J.J. Shilstrop over from the Boston Cannons. Petting into it just by virtue of being a lefty attackman who could kind of stretch the field a little bit, we'll see how things go during this period, but that seems like a position they would need to address. I don't know what the Matt Kavanaugh situation is right now. We do know the Pat Kavanaugh situation because he's not there. And so that kind of leaves a big circle in that spot. If there's a question mark at that lefty attack joining Marcus Holman and Asher Nolting. So, did JJ do enough in this tournament to kind of, earn a spot, bringing him into camp or something like that? Quite possibly. They all seemed to really enjoy his presence in the locker room and the way he kind of got along with the guys. I asked them about that in one of their press conferences. He kind of fit right in. And that's one of the things I think is huge about the championship series. You bring these guys in and you can kind of test them out on both the performance level and the how do they get along with the rest of our team sort of level. So, yeah, those two are the ones who jump out to me as far as now I'm really curious to see what free agency looks like for him.
Yep. Carter Parlett, another guy, D mid role on that Cannons team, was the embodiment of sort of what this offseason contest is all about. Ryan Holman revealed post game. There's a lot of chirping going on, running back to the benches. Carter Parlett goes to the opposing Archers running off alongside him. I don't even play in this league, man. And I'm beating your butt like right now. Like, that is awesome. Someone go sign him. He's gritty. He made all the plays down the stretch during Notre Dame's title run and did the same for the Cannons. Rosie, another championship series down, another podcast down. Vance, if you liked what you heard, leave a review, tell a friend, share it even. And if anyone knows, like, where, if Logan Wisnowskis is going, if anyone has any intel there, email me, kbrown@insidethecross.com, because, you know, we're keeping our eyes out, ears peeled, or is the opposite, whatever. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great day.